Okay, that's a good question. Maybe that should be part of what is discussed in making the policy. Okay. Thank you for that, Eric.
Yeah, thanks, Catherine. I just want to respond to our colleague's comment about drive time and people in their vehicles. And I frequently work phones during the pledge drives. And it's not unusual to get numerous calls from persons saying, I want to make a pledge, but I'm in my car. I can't pull out my credit card just now. I'm going to suggest that's a sampling of the amount of people listening. So in Washington, we have a substantial number. I mean, obviously, well, I wouldn't say obviously. I'm gambling it's not tens of thousands, but I'm going to suggest it's hundreds. We get these calls frequently. And in fact, the immediate answer is, well, this, you can't pull over, call us later, but we do have a substantial number of people in vehicles who do listen.
Okay. I think that's probably true of all the stations, personally. Okay. Okay, so so we're talking about training. So are there any comments from any of us on what specific training that we want to include in the resolution on training for consideration?
Is Sabrina on the stack?
Kathy? She's not on the stack, but she's on the call.
Sabrina, I'd be curious to hear from Sabrina about what the apprenticeship program was at KPFA that she went through. What did she get from it?
No, Jim. I did not go through the apprenticeship program. The last time you asked me about it, you mentioned that. I did not go through the – yeah, I went to San Francisco State and got a bachelor's in radio. So I don't – but what is your – I could try and answer your question, though. What's your question?
Well, I was talking to one of your colleagues in the Bay Area, and I was impressed with...
Who were you talking to?
Carol. I was talking to Carol, and I was talking to Frank.
Carol.
And I was impressed with how, I mean, some of the things you guys do are a little different. They have, like, initiation ceremonies, or they have community agreements, which, you know, so I guess everybody's on the same page or whatnot. But they were really... teaching people all sorts of skills at great length, how to do news, how to use different software packages. Somebody yesterday raised to me the question of voice training, because I remember when Jose Santiago, the former news director of WBAI, he went to have voice training. And so there's lots of things that sort of enter the picture about how do you sort of work out a situation tailored to various stations that can be helpful to new people coming in, so it can simply create a better tone on the air and a more exuberant and creative environment where people are doing interesting things and they have production skills. Because many times producers don't have production skills, as you well know.
Yes, I'd like to be on the stack as well. When I was working at WBAI as the public affairs director, I did a lot of training. So it is a necessary thing for, I would say, new producers, but at this point I would say most of the producers, because there hasn't been training in a number of years. What I really wanted to say is that there are other resources, like AFTRA, for instance, has a lot of training programs. The union that Pacifica is part of, because they train people to do voiceovers and commercials and how to present their voice in a way that is productive and profitable, I suppose, for those persons. So, you know, maybe we could look into other resources that the stations can use to help train staff, you know, making it available to the staff, because AFTER makes it available to its membership. The difficulty might be, however, I'm not sure if that includes unpaid staff, but it's there may be some accommodations that could be made in training.
Catherine.
Yes, who is that?
Sabrina.
No, someone else asked if they could go to the stack. I wait till they finish to make my comment.
Okay. Okay, Sabrina?
Yeah, just to speak to the comment that Jim made, to move it further, I think that we could possibly take portions of the apprentice program, especially after it goes through its curriculum revamping, and apply that to the stations, you know, do it on a national level. And mandate that the program directors, if they're available, the GMs, if they're available to, or if there is one at the station, to implement, you know, certain portions of the apprenticeship program as far as training is concerned. I think that would help out a lot. That would reinforce the educational status of Pacifica Foundation and enable us to get more grants as well. Thank you.
Okay. And was that Eric who wanted to speak?
Yeah, I was just getting at the we're
Dwayne,
just
go ahead.
Dwayne? Okay,
yeah,
Eric.
Yeah, go ahead, man. Yeah. After him. Yeah, after him.
Okay.
That's fine.
No, I was just giving an advisory. We're running roughly 35 minutes ahead of schedule. In the event you wanted to make a decision.
Cool.
I can't believe it.
This must be a red letter day in Pacifica. I didn't think it was possible.
Yeah, right.
Everybody's depressed about the election last night.
Well, okay.
Dwayne.
Well, thank you. Actually, I wish I would have the time to tell you why I'm very hopeful and impressed and grateful for some of the results last night. But as it relates to this program, I'm encouraged by this conversation, especially the last comment with respect to training. And if you would indulge me for just a moment, while I haven't been a program at KPFT in my 9 or 10 years of intimate sacrifices and as a board chair and other positions, I have done 2 or 3 special programs at KPFT, but my actual history is commercial programming in the Houston market with various radio stations based on political candidate programming, debate, things of that nature. And I say that to say, I go way back when you had to have a third-class FCC license to get on the radio when I graduated from Columbia School of Broadcasting in 1978, which incidentally started in L.A. and had about 60 different branches across the nation. And training, you were required to have 1,500 clock hours before you could get in front of a mic. That was the FCC rule. So we've come a long way. And as a result of that, the quality of the programmer has been reduced, of course, but I think the way we can approach that and the way we can address that is a national program director, someone who would be responsible for workshops, training, standards, setting certain standards that an individual would have to have before they came on a mic of Pacifica, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jim, to the stack.
Okay. Yeah, I agree with that, Dwayne. I think that that's true. But so that was Jim. I want to comment on what you said as well. Jim?
Okay. One of the things that I think is very important, I know we were doing it here in New York a couple of years ago, but it was sort of the ball drop, was to interact with the journalism schools here, particularly the journalism schools that are training people in multimedia journalism, that is, they're teaching them how to shoot, how to do audio, et cetera. Because part of the reason we wanted to sort of interact with them was sort of to learn and see what kind of curriculum they're doing. Now, recently, I went to a political organizing operation that was run by an outfit called Trans Alternative Transportation. And what they did was they started their training with a basic training type of thing. They had about 50 or 60 people come in, and they divided up their teaching of political skills into 5 segments. And then afterwards, they set up classes essentially going on into January on different aspects of political organizing. Now, how I would see that applying to a programming situation would be that you could set up a situation where someone, you know, you have maybe 20 or 30 producers come in, and you have them go through different stations where 4 or 5 different topics are dealt with. For example, someone could say, okay, here's the best way to write a script, and you actually have people write a script. Or here, how do you announce, or how do you forward promote? And you just simply circulate everybody through a number of stations as a beginning to sort of, okay, here's introductory 101. And then you start creating situations where you bring in other skill sets, such as, radio drama or other things like that. And I know that the BBC, for example, has an extensive, I will get that and send it to people, has an extensive website that's designed to have people do tutorials on radio production or audio production. And so that kind of stuff, I think we could spread out and sprinkle throughout the entire system and have people just, you know, come in and do it at their own levels. But I do think we have to have a level of basic training so that we get everybody on the same page about certain simple things.
10 seconds, please.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
Okay. So I'm Catherine. Was last on the stack at this moment. The thing that occurred to me when you were speaking, Dwayne, is that one of the things that we're not doing and that we could do is begin to assess the skill sets that we have amongst our community, be they producers or otherwise. While we may need the national program director to organize these things and set policies, I believe that we have a lot of people who have specific skills, maybe not in everything, that if we start employing our unpaid producers, our paid producers, in what they know how to do, it might be a way of getting it kick-started. So that's just my thought.
I don't know if he's online right now, and I would like to listen to Mr. Benito's experience. But Anissa, for the stack, I was going to say, let's look at what colleges we're comparing. I mean, we're comparing schools that are academically advantaged. We're not looking at historically black colleges. We're not looking at, especially on the high school level, the schools that are, you know, considered District 3 or 4, which are underachieving or at-risk schools, and especially in places that are in at-risk neighborhoods.
So you're speaking in terms of providing training for people in those schools?
Yeah, I mean, well, those are the schools that are the first ones to halt their, if those schools have a media program or music programs for musical education, those are the first programs to go. I mean, the schools that are, they're academically struggling, they have they're made of mostly at-risk students who are going to be, you know, pregnant by 15 and 16 and won't have an educational base.
Okay. I think that's something to consider if once we actually have a training program, Catherine, for the staff, and certainly it's something that could contribute to fundraising and other kinds of funding if we were providing that service. So,
Jim, the staff, Kathy.
Okay, does anyone else want to speak on this, Jim, in case you have not to speak? Who's that?
Anissa, after Jim.
Okay. All right, Jim.
Yeah. One issue I raised last time was this question of the status of the Pacifica stations outside of California as a nonprofit, because I had mentioned that for some reason WBAI had not set itself up properly to receive nonprofit, you know, foundation grants or anything like that. In doing research, I discovered that BAI in the 70s actually had a grant from the New York State Council on the Arts to do training of kids at the station.
Can we mute the phones, please? Mute your phone if you have noise going on or if you're not speaking.
Oh, you son of a bitch!
Oh, my goodness.
Is somebody having a fight? Or a nervous breakdown?
Sounds like some intervention is necessary.
Okay.
Anyway, we get that out of
go ahead, Jim. So something had to change in the status or the law.
I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened, but the other thing is that the podcasting whole phenomena is essentially they're doing produced radio. That's what you look at the top podcaster. Comes out of This American Life. Catherine may remember that he was a part of the news department at WBAI before he went to Chicago.
Whole
podcasting movement is something that we have to work with because those people are just doing produced radio. That's really what it is. It's produced radio. And so the interaction with the whole podcasting effort going on is something that we really could benefit from at all the stations throughout the country.
Okay. No. Podcasting. Anissa, then Sabrina.
Right.
Hey!
Well,
that
I mean, we look at, I don't know about, all of you.
Oh, wait a minute. This is getting
somebody
out of hand.
Somebody please mute.
Well, then I won't
Hello?
Be on my end.
Oh, is that in your background?
Unfortunately, yes.
Okay, and as long as you're safe, go ahead.
No, but I mean,
go ahead.
Well, I mean, as students, I'm not sure about y'all, but I mean, I think, a majority of students at some point, during school would, pick a class and ditch. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, when we're looking at students and the student behaviors, I mean, are these the classes, and what kind of, how many students, ditch during a particular semester or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think we're primarily talking about our producers, though, and if they ditch, they could lose their programs, I suppose. Sabrina?
What we started about 2, maybe 3 years ago, actually, at KPFA, we have a podcast section on the website. It's an option for, for those that are running the risk of losing their spot, their broadcasting real estate, if you would, on the, during the day or night or whatever. So that's an option just to dovetail on what Jim said. So, and that doesn't cost much. I mean, the same person, whoever, updates the websites, for our stations, they can just add that section on and start adding, podcast shows. And,
mm-hmm.
I mean, most people make their own playlists nowadays. That's where we're at. So, that's definitely a good way for us to move into the future as a network. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, that sounds good to me, that's for sure. So we are, we fleshed out this idea a bit, unless anyone has more to add. And we have the two topics that we put on board for next week. One was Dwayne talking about having a national program director. And the other was creating some kind of regular line for people to submit ideas and demo tapes for shows. So since we have a little bit of time left, would anyone want to flesh those ideas out?
Well, before we go there, may I just make a last comment on the standing?
Certainly. Yeah.
I think it was Jim who made mention that we have responsibility and the mandate to put on the air with the people, with our listeners, with our supporters, with our potential supporters want to hear. I believe it. If not, I don't want to trip to the wrong person, but I certainly agree. And I think we have two mechanisms in this foundation, probably more, but I'd like to, for tonight, for example, we have first, we have the CAB, which, according to CPB, and I think Jim's comment really came right out of CPB in terms
of... You're fading in and out. You said CAB, then I didn't hear after that.
I said there are two mechanisms that we already have in place to help us achieve what Jim alluded to and what the CPB requires to do, and that is the CAB, the Community Advisory Board, which some of them, when they do good work, so they do studies, they do surveys, or Survey Monkey, whatever they use, in order to glean information from the communities. The other, of course, is our local program committees as well, who should reflect the community first and be diverse. But I think that those two mechanisms can be used by a national program director to really...
Wayne, we can't hear you. You're going in and out. It's impossible to understand what you're saying.
Okay.
Can you hold your phone closer?
What was the second one? The second mechanism.
Is this better?
Yeah.
It is. Just to recap quickly, that we have two mechanisms that help us to achieve what CPB and what Jim alluded to and what all of us know, we must reflect the communities that we serve in terms of needs and programming and issues and wants. So the CPB tell us that the CAB, our Community Advisory Board, can provide us with a lot of information and data when it's doing its job. In addition to that, our local program committees, or whatever we call them, who are supposed to reflect the communities, cross-section of them, and able to be those antennas to really bring to us what the community want, what they want to hear, what their needs are. And that's what my comments were, moving toward a national director, mm-hmm. a national program director who could bring all these pieces together and be responsible for implementing and perhaps keeping most of our stations more compliant with CPB as it relates to these issues.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that sounds good.
Jim,
can be compliant. Who was that?
Jim Taffy. I just want to piggyback on what Dwayne said. I think that anytime the stations send out premiums to listeners, we should constantly be sending out questionnaires to get feedback from them. Like, and it has to change up. It's like playing baseball. You got to change it up. But we want to get as much feedback from them as possible in terms of what they think, what they want. And I know that when people come to these meetings, because I was the chair of the CAB, I was on the program council at BAI, a lot of it can be self-serving, but we want to broaden out listening to all sorts of different people, and SurveyMonkey is a good thing. At some point, Catherine, I just want to make some comments about this internet radio streaming thing we have on the agenda before we split.
Oh, okay. All right. Before we go to the new stuff, did I skip that? I think I did.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, what I wanted to say about that is I think that every station, we could have on every station, we should have a video streaming operation going on that is oriented to covering demonstrations, covering real live events, because all the time, there are things that happen in New York, I can remember, I could list them ad nauseum, events which could have been covered by video streaming. And, you know, if we were giving that a prominent place, that would solve a lot of problems when people always complain, oh, you're not doing anything that's live and relevant. We could have video streamers going up and covering demonstrations, covering happening political events right now. And then the other thing I think is that each station should think about creating different kind of streaming operations that are tailored to its own specific needs. For example, in New York, you know, we could set up several streaming operations that could be separate sources of new content. And I would want to reserve it for new content, period, along the lines of what Sabrina was talking about, where, you know, people might have been taken off the air to go to podcasts. You know, that's a sort of alternative. But we really have to figure out ways to encourage all this young energy going on. And that gets back to what Anise says. I've been in a station where kids came walking in from the neighborhood and wanted to be DJs when we first moved out to that location in Brooklyn. And there's no easy way to do that. So I think if we were doing something really exciting digitally that was a real happening thing, that taking full advantage and aimed to Generation Z and the millennials, particularly Generation Z, we'd have a whole bunch of different kind of energy coming into the situation that we can't even imagine yet.
10 seconds, please.
I'm done.
Okay. I love it. So there has to be a practical way to manage that. And I suppose that's part of the discussion we can do going forward. But I love it.
Catherine, I wanted to add something to that. Another thing I think we should send to the national is that Pacifica should explore what's going on in the blockchain technologies, because there's this whole operation going on that is just bypassing us, which are all these news outlets are being sponsored by I don't want to get into a big detailed discussion about what blockchain journalism is, but essentially they're listener-sponsored news operations that are politically hip, and we should look into that. I'll write a resolution down the road about it, but there's an organization called Civil that basically is sponsoring with millions of dollars all sorts of kind of lefty kinds of journalistic things, and they also have Reuters, of all places, part of the operation. So I think that could be a great source of new content for us, and I'll flesh that out. It's complicated to explain. I can't do it in 90 seconds, but I want to sort of at some point throw that out to everybody to sort of think about.
Would that be another source of funding as well?
I think that we'd have to make deals with these, because these guys are being funded by 50, 60, 70,000 people are participating and sponsoring different kinds of journalistic enterprises that are part of this whole operation, and they're getting money from outside entities. And yes, we would have to work out side deals for it'd be sort of like, in a way, setting up a news operation. They have a place that an outfit that does something on corruption, political corruption. We'd have to work out the details, but it could be a great effort of money coming in that would mutually benefit both parties. It's just a whole new thing going on right now.
Okay, so, yeah, definitely send
us a message. I'll flush it out.
Okay. We have these two points, National Program Director, and a way for people to submit proposals. I would like to speak on the second one, in the sense that in the past, certainly WBAI had a mechanism for that. It was called a program council. It hasn't been functional for a very long time, but I remember that the program council, which was a combination of primarily of producers, would vet the various proposals and recommend to the program director, who would then review and put people onto the air through that. But there may be other ways to do it, like something on the website, just submit your proposals to the program director. That's what I would have to say about that. Does anyone else want to comment on either of these topics? National Program Director or people submitting ideas and demo tapes for shows?
Well, Anissa on the stack.
Yes, Anissa.
I mean, and, you know, this is great and this is important. And, you know, I'm looking at, you know, nowadays and what's, you know, kind of coming up and what's unknown, especially after, you know, 2001 with 9/11. I mean, it's, there's a huge wave recently, and I'm not sure California and New York might have a better have a better view, but there's a huge wave of Islamophobia, and you know,
a huge wave of what?
There's a huge wave for things like Islamophobia. There's you know, an uptick in you know, gay bashing, I'm sure, and you know, I don't know as far as certain committees or certain communities, you know, what kind of pushback they get. I mean, and, you know, we have two Islamic programs kind of on our station in Houston. And, you know, I mean, even when you're looking at the Muslim community, it's still very male-driven. I'm sure there are a lot of female Muslim programmers, and I mean, I'm sure that, you know, they would have a lot to say as far as certain issues. Unfortunately, you know, in the Me Too era, a lot of us have all been victims of some form of domestic violence, and a lot of that is unknown to the mainstream public.
Okay.
Right. And I mean, you know, I was gonna say, I figure, I don't know, California and New York. I mean, I would say, especially New York and Washington would definitely have. I don't know what the numbers are as far as an Islamic audience, but I'm sure y'all have a big one.
Probably not as much as the Midwest, but I'm sure we do. I'm sure we do.
But, I mean, and those stations, I mean, it's, whatever, you know, Muslim-specific programming y'all have, it would probably be mostly ran by a male host. I mean, I don't know if y'all have a female host.
I think we do, or at least we have collectives that are male and female.
Excellent. Good.
So, yes, who is that?
No, I was just going to mention to you, we've got 15 minutes left.
Okay.
Dwayne,
so we don't have. Okay, Dwayne. Go ahead.
Tagging on to what Anissa has been saying, the theme of the millennials and even those who are 30 and 40, KPFT actually have had a successful run and effort to bring about 30 to 50 high school students in on Friday evenings, and some of their lives have been actually transformed as a result of the experience and organized, protracted experience that a young lady who also published a trade magazine here in Houston, which really is what it's described as third ward parent part of town, which we do wards here in Houston. But my larger point would be that to expand that idea and that concept. But I want to speak to the national program director, because specifically standards have not been in place for Pacifica or even KPFT, and I can only speak for the one of the sisters or brothers, and that would be that someone alluded to how programs are chosen, not by committee, generally then by a program director or manager, and fairly arbitrary, even with the submission documents being hard to find on the website. Now, with a national program director, I'm believing that an individual would have someone who would be responsible for making sure certain standards, like what are the basic things, what is the a uniform document that everyone across the network would fill out, and maybe even the eyes of the national program director and the local program director have shared responsibility in making decisions about who gets an opportunity. But even looking larger than that, as a national program director, I believe the training that is necessary. I was thinking about Connect the Dots, which was a show here for 21 years, and it was never syndicated, at least with our five stations. And I told this station manager, who had been in place for 15 years, and at least 8 years ago, that it would cause 300 or more of our affiliates to want to pick it up, because that is what I call comportable information knowledge content. They actually dealt, they were geeks, computer geeks. They would help you actually troubleshoot, fix your computer over. And this was much more exciting 10, 15, 20 years ago than me talking about it now. But this was
10 seconds, please.
That cross pollinization that is necessary. And we have shows now that no matter what community you're in, even across the world, that the information is germane to your life and it can be useful to you. And that's how I think we can build this network with content from all stations, and that would cause all stations to listen to the network as well as the 300 or more affiliates.
Okay.
Hey, Eric, to the stack.
Okay, I'm sorry, who is that?
Eric.
Yes, Eric.
I just have a slight concern about the role the local program directors would have in all of this, if they would just be someone to implement the directive coming from a national program director. It's not so much a concern, I guess it's a question, what the role of the local program director would be if they would be basically just an assistant to the national program director.
I have a response prepared.
Okay.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I think the way to ameliorate that problem is to, first off, make sure each five of the program directors are of equal ability.
We can't hear you, Duane.
First off, you would have to make sure that each five of the program directors were totally professional and equal in abilities. And here's how you handle and ameliorate that problem. You rotate the national program directorship through all five over a five-year or a 10-year period, whichever you may choose. But that way, each one know that they're going to sit in that seat. So they would be have some reason to want some continuity and shared responsibility, because each is going to be responsible at some point.
All right. That's a good idea.
Jim to the stock.
Okay, Jim.
I hear all you guys are saying. I just wanted to throw these things in. Part of the implementation issue, and it has to be, I think we sometimes in Pacifica have sort of traditional American attitudes about management, that the buck stops here with the general manager, the buck stops here with the program director. And, you know, all of us know our local programming and station cultures, which are filled with literally dozens of people who are highly opinionated, highly motivated to get what they want for their own selves. And I think that we have to keep in mind that the objective of all the things that we want to see happen is to get the amount of people listening to each station each week. And I'm talking about New York now, but I'm sure this applies to everybody else. Double and triple and quadruple what it is right now. I'd like to see 500,000 people a week listening to WBAI. Then we wouldn't be draining other people of money, and we wouldn't have all these arguments going on. And that, to me, is the objective, to figure out how to do that. Now, one thing I wanted to throw in the mix. A couple of years ago, a teenager came walking into WBAI and wanted to do a talent show with teenagers coming in and performing. And somebody sort of rebuffed them, and then another person sort of caught them at the door And about 2 months later, kids from the special high schools in New York, private schools, public schools, they came in and did a four-hour performance by themselves of song, poetry, and spoken word.
10 seconds, please.
We should be encouraging that all the time to have young people come in. It's right in the Pacific Commission. It encourages arts. We should be having young people come in and use the spaces to do all sorts of different things and do artistic and performing arts kinds of things all the time.
Madam Chair, we have 5 minutes left on the schedule.
Okay. I think we've covered everything. Does anyone have any final comments?
Oh, thank you for your stewardship, Catherine, as always.
Yeah, thanks, Kathy.
Definitely.
You're welcome. So I think we have a lot of ideas to think about putting into our recommendations. So maybe we could all write out for ourselves what is key to each one and just submit it to the group, and we can have it to insert into or edit however we want to integrate everyone's ideas into the final proposals that we're going to put forth to the network. So with that, I took notes, but I'm not sure I got everything. So thank you all. Thank you all, I guess. Are there any last comments? If not,
from Washington, good night.
Good night.
Meeting adjourned. Good night.
Good night.